Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today we're being joined by Rowland County Judge Executive Walter Blevins. And Doc Blevins, thanks so much for coming over
and
joining
us. Glad to be
here.
Thank you.
Well, as always, we like to start by talking about the progress on the jail project, which a lot of people see on a daily basis since it's right there off of US 60. And how are things going?
Things are going well. We had one little change order. Again, we've probably used less than maybe 10-11% of the contingency funds, so we've been very very blessed. A lot of projects, especially this kind of size, we usually have much larger change orders. So we're hoping the trend continues. But this was for $1,791. It's little doors to put into the Chase, so that you can get into your pipes and your water and sewer pipes and be able to take care of them without having to break through the wall. So I don't know how that got left out, but I guess when a major project, those things do happen. But they only needed two for right now, but he talked like they might have to come back and do a couple, not a couple more, maybe 10 more of them. So the price may go up, but those things happen, and it's money that'll actually save us problems in the long run.
Well, talk about that contingency fund that you build into the cost, basically, of the project. Many people aren't aware of how that works.
Well, you just plan on having some change orders, contingency money. I think we have about $930,000 that we put in there for that type of thing, and we've spent about maybe $100,000 of it so far, and so there's quite a bit of money left, and hopefully we can take that money and help. May pay the debt down some, or pay some debt down on some other projects, we can hopefully if there's. I know the jailer's talking about maybe needing a place for outside equipment that's not in our plans. That we may want to their lawnmowers and stuff like that with weed eaters. That when they go out here and help the community, and they need a place to store those things and keep them out of the weather. So I understand that may be another thing that we can use those dollars for.
When you talk about this, and I know that people say, well, geez, you've had all these change orders since you started the project, but this is something I think you anticipated. It just happens on a routine basis.
It just happens. I mean, there's no way you're going to make a large drawing and hit dot every I and cross every T. It just doesn't happen. And so you build in the contingency money to cover those kinds of things. And right now we've been very lucky on having to not have to spend as much of that money.
You know, the weather was great in February. Here in March, of course, we've had
a little rain.
A little rain, a little bit of snow here from time to time. I mean, it's been cold. I mean, but at the same time, it looks like the construction really hasn't been impacted.
They were able to work right through it, and that's what we want to see. We're hoping we can get in there in January, and early January, and the sooner we get, the sooner we can start making money, or at least not spending as much money. I understand there were 2,300 state prisoners that are they can't find a place for. So there'll be a need for state prison, plus all the surrounding counties are kind of chopping at the bit to a place to bring their prisoners as well. So we think we'll be very lucky in filling that facility up fairly quickly and getting up to full speed.
I have to ask you this question. You mentioned 2,300 state prisoners that don't have a place right now. What are they doing with them?
I'm not sure what they're doing with them. I know they're talking about opening up some private prisons, but I don't think they've done that yet. But there's a big demand on trying to find a place for these. I guess they're probably backed up in some county jails, a lot of them, and just overcrowding in most of our county jails right now.
Well, when you were back in the state Senate, we talked about this issue once before, and you said, you know, you've still got the Little Sandy Correctional Complex that I guess is part of it closed, or they can't expand it?
We were going to try to expand it, and at the time they didn't want to put the money into it. But again, that's when you do expand it, and eventually it will be expanded, you're going to be paying a higher price to expand than if we would have expanded years ago.
How many inmates are currently in that, or roughly how many inmates? You know, I know, and I want to point out to people that's over in Elliott County.
Yeah, that's in Elliott County. I think there's over 600 or 700, I think, maybe more. I haven't looked at those figures in a while. And of course, West Liberty, I think, is the largest right now in the state, and it's close to 2,000 prisoners.
I think we'd closed a couple of private prisons here in the state here
we
over
did,
the last several years.
There was some concerned whether these people are being treated fairly, and a lot of people just don't think you ought to be making profits off of people's misery. And so we decided not to use those facilities. Again, they're in a hard spot now, and they passed a resolution or a law, perhaps, I guess it was, or an executive order so that they can go in and use the, maybe reopen those and try to get us through this crunch time.
Looks like you dealt with a number of budgetary issues here in this week's fiscal court meeting.
Yeah, we had the bids. Of course, we only got one bid for the blacktop, and it's Henkel. The price went up a little bit at not as much as what we expected. Let me first talk about our the bids were up on the cleaning of the judicial center and the courthouse. We had three bids, and we stayed with our. The one bid was a little lower, but with people wanted to keep what we had. He's done a good job, and we went with Clean Sweep Janitorial, and they'll continue to clean our facilities and maintain our facilities for us. They were a little higher, a few thousand, maybe $3,000 or $4,000, I think it was, compared to. The second bid was TH Janitorial Services, and but if they were Clean Sweep was they're a local company too. They live here in Moorhead. Both these people, I think, live in Moorhead. But Clean Sweep's been doing it, I think, since the beginning of the facility's opening, and people are satisfied with them. They feel safe that they're in there around documents and. Sometimes money and those types of things, they just didn't want to take an opportunity to change. And so I think the one bid was higher on them using their own supplies, and the bid was lower if we bought the supplies. But it was such a small amount of difference, and because that we had some we know that they've done a good job, and if nothing's occurred bad and when they're on duty. So people just the court decided unanimously to vote with keeping Clean Sweep Janitorial. If I can find those other documents here, the of course we got bids on bridge materials on the concrete. It went up some. We had one bid for it. I wish we had more bids to make it more competitive, but we had one bid on the binder and the bituminous server, the blacktop, and all those things went up some. I don't have those. I've got the figures here, but I don't have the comparison to tell you. It might be here. I don't know how much detail you want to get into, but we accepted all the bids, except for one that was Compass Minerals. That was a salt bid. It was still pretty high compared to what we paid last year. We went through CAECO on the reverse auction and got about $10 a ton on our salt. Right now we don't really need any salt this year. It doesn't look like. We didn't use very little, and we've got all that we can handle under our salt dome out there and our salt storage facility. And so we didn't accept their bid, accept that bid for the salt. But the other bids, which were basically the same people that have been doing this for years and years, and they didn't go up a lot, but a small little creeping of the cost.
Well, that was a benefit that you and I talked about of having such a mild winter, is not using the road salt.
That's
and
right.
When you talk about that, how much does that cost per ton, roughly?
Well, I think I think they requested $80. Let me look at that price here if I can find it real quick for you. A lot of numbers here. I don't want to get them mixed up. I think we were paying like $70-some through the reverse auction. And if I can find that, I can't find it right off the top of my head, but I think it was like $84 a ton they wanted. So it's quite a bit more than what we've been paying.
You know how much you've even used this year?
Maybe 150 tons. Probably is the max we've used this year. We've been very, very lucky, and of course the state's been lucky, and the city, everybody's been lucky on having to use salt, and that means that we don't have to go out and buy it again. We probably won't even buy any this year. So we're hoping that maybe the price will go down, and we're going to look at the reverse auction. We may go ahead and put a bid on that, and if we have to, maybe build another storage facility. And you can buy it that cheap. It might be cheaper to go ahead and build another storage facility and haul and keep more of it.
Yeah, because obviously the price could go up next year.
It can definitely go up. It fluctuates. It's a volatile market, and the more you can store, sometimes the better it is for the taxpayers.
How much road salt do you have stored right now?
I think there's about over 600 tons rock salt right now that we've got stored.
So that's quite a bit.
It's quite a bit, and we have a contract to, if we needed more, we could get more. But I think that's about all we can handle right now. It's about 600.
I was going to ask you about that, just in case you needed more next year. You probably have to put things into place so that even though you start with plenty, you have to make sure you have enough to get through the winter.
You got to make sure you can get more. You got to renew your contract. But we were very pleased with the reverse auction bid, and CAECO would, I think, do that again in early May. And if the price is reasonable, like it was last year, we may go ahead and try to build some storage area and hold more of it if we can get a reasonable price.
I saw that you dealt with accepting the detention center's fiscal year 2017-18 budget, and I guess does that include the new facility?
That includes 6 months of the 6 to 7 months of the new facility, depending on when we get in. We approved it except for the personnel. There was some question about some of the positions that he's requested. Discussion about, I think he's wanting 12-hour shifts, and we're still looking at doing 8-hour shifts. So we're going to have some discussion. Basically, he had to present it to us. We've still got an opportunity to go through it and look at it and try to get answer some questions and determine which way is the best way to go on this.
I was going to ask you, why would there be a need perhaps to go from 8 to 12 hours?
Well, I think he's talked to some of the other jails that have used the 12-hour shifts. I guess the reasoning behind that is that supposedly those people get three-day weeks. Sometimes they work 3 12s, and they're off for 3 or 4 days, and then they come back, and it's better for people not getting burnt out, except there's some research that says, you know, those last 2 or 3 hours of a 12-hour shift, you may not be getting very efficient work habits because it's a long time to sit there and look at a computer screen, perhaps. We're going to look at that. Our concern is that the first 6 months is going to be in the old jail, and the new jail may take a few months to get it up to par. So we think we might be better off to go with 8-hour shifts for the time being. Then we can always look at it down the road if we think the 12-hour shifts might be better. But you wind up paying time and a half for those 8 hours a week that they're going to be working over. Let me see if I can get that right here.
Be 12 hours, I guess, if it's 12, 3 days.
Yeah, but you have to pay anything over 8 hours is 4 hours. So you're looking at quite a bit of overtime pay, which is time and a half. And some people like it, but we're concerned that, especially with the transition from the old jail to the new, we think we're better off maybe monetarily. If you run the numbers, it saves about $160,000 to $180,000 if you go with the 8-hour shifts versus 12-hour, because you just don't pay the overtime.
Leads me to my next question in regards to the 2017-18 budget for the jail. Is it projected to be significantly more than the budget when you talk about this current facility?
Quite a bit more because you're increasing the amount of people that's going to take to run it, or you're increasing the amount of hours they're going to have to do it. So there's an increase there. There's going to be an increase in the electricity and the food, and those things go when you go from 100 bed, or actually 78 bed facility to close to 300 beds. The cost has to go up some, but we think that we're going to be able to receive enough money from the surrounding counties and the state prisoners. I think the $35 a day is what we charge our local counties, and the state I think is $31 and 60 or 70 cents. I think I should have that figure in front of me, but I don't have it right now. It's still, you want to have that thing filled. It's better than having an empty bed, so we'll take all the county prisoners we can and then try to fill in with state prisoners.
Roughly, what's the current budget for the jail, and what's it projected to go up to?
Those figures, let me see if I can find those real quick. It's in the jail budget here. Go ahead and ask me another question.
All right, I was going to say
I'm looking that, so I can find that for you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the number of employees, too, as well. I know that that has to go up with a bigger facility, and I was curious if you knew the number of employees that the new jail would take.
I think it's about 12 more people to help run it, which isn't a lot, but it's about 5 or 6 more than what we thought it was going to take, because with the technology that we have embedded into this system, we're hoping that we can get by with less people than what would be tripling the size of your facility. But again, those things we're just going to have to kind of work out and see how it actually goes.
All right, we'll go ahead and take a break. We can come back with more in just a moment here on the Front Page. I'm Chuck Morales, and we're talking again with Rowan County Judge Executive Walter Blevins.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
I'm Chuck Morales. Again, we're joined by Rowan County Judge Executive Walter Blevins. And Walter, you were looking up some figures while we were into the break about the current jail budget and what the projected budget will be as they move into their new facility.
Under the current plan, he's talking about increasing the employees. He's going, I don't think there's a captain right now. There's not a captain. That's going to fairly be expensive. We're going to look at that. I think there's no lieutenants. There's adding 4 sergeants that we don't have. He's adding quite a few people. We're going to look at those and make sure we can try to use as few as we can and still make it a safe facility.
The one thing I know that we've talked about in the past, perhaps with all these state prisoners and all these prisoners from other counties, actually this jail may be more cost-efficient and actually be closer to budget, where it's not costing the taxpayers
that's
as
the hope.
Much.
That's the hope, and if we can fill it up, I think that'll be the scenario that'll occur, that we'll actually be putting less of our local tax dollars into this facility than what we are currently doing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if we had not built one, I know people say, well, why do we even build one, you know? But it was going to cost us around $2 million a year to transfer the cost of – and, of course, we'd have to pay the cost if they take them whichever jail they take them. We'd pay the $35 a day. You start adding that up, and then you got nothing to show for it. You lose, 15, 20 jobs here locally. You would lose those because you wouldn't need them, and that hurts a lot of families that have done a good job for us. So we think this is the right way to go, because there's not a regional jail in this facility. Again, you've got Morgan County with no jail. They got a prison with no jail. Menifee, Bath, Elliott, Carter does have a jail. Fleming doesn't have a jail. And Lewis, I think they're pretty far away, they've got a jail too. So a lot of surrounding counties, plus some of these other counties will probably even bring them from not just the surrounding counties if we've got the beds. So we think that we'll be able to fill that thing up pretty quickly.
I'm going to ask you about another matter we've discussed here in recent programs regarding your desire to get countywide zoning put into place. And you talked about maybe getting some people to put together a special blue ribbon panel to look at this entire idea. Where are you with everything?
Well, I haven't got that done yet. Of course, I don't know how far we can get with it, but I still would like to at least get the thing out there and let people tell us how they feel about it. I mean, if we can write it a certain way that we protect certain agriculture people, I think they're probably the biggest opponents of zoning, because they don't want somebody tell them they can't build a barn, they can't put up a fence. But you can write your planning and zoning or land management, you can write it where you don't make any kind of restrictions on agricultural land unless they decide to subdivide it, and then they would come under zoning. But if they want to keep their farm, not do anything, there would be a lot of extra problem for them. If they want to build a outbuilding or add on to the home or whatever they want to do, there wouldn't be very little that would occur. So it's in how you write this, and that's what we're going to try to do, is get some help on writing it so that we can make as many people happy with it as they can. We think it's something that most of your modern communities in the state have it. And if you're going to have growth, like we're supposed to have growth, if you don't have that in place, then a lot of people can get hurt, and a lot of people's land prices can actually go down. And that's why you have planning and zoning, is to try to protect that.
And we've talked about it. You want to get plenty of public input on this matter.
Yes, well, we want to, when you get this committee set up, I want to hopefully do that this week or next week, and try to get out in the field and go to maybe each one of the fire departments in one of their rooms, and let people come and tell us what they think about it, and listen to what our plan is before they start saying, no, I'm not for it. I think if they can realize that zoning is there to help protect people, not just hurt people. It's there because most communities don't want to see a hog farm come into their next door to their subdivision. So if you don't have that zoning, you can't protect that type of situation. So there's lots of, I think there's some people want it, some people don't, but we'll see, maybe get a better idea of how people feel in the community if we get out here and talk about it anyway.
City recently had its second reading in regards to the tax increment financing district measure.
I think they had their first reading this week. I believe it's their first reading. We had our first reading as well, and we were able to pass it. I went ahead and appointed Ray White as my court representative on that committee, and also Bob Albert, who's up here at the university, who lives out on 158. And the county is going to be my representative as at large. Of course, I think Dan Markwell is the at large candidate for the city, and Glenn Tigger, I think, is the council representative. Of course, myself and the mayor, and Tony Pence will be the the member, but not a non-voting member. He'll be the chairman of it.
This is something that all the people who are proposing this idea and are for it feel could really lead to a great deal of development and then tax revenue perhaps for the city and county, which will help you do some other things.
Absolutely. It's a tool in the box that you can use to attract development. I mean, we need a parking garage downtown. Would be nice with the conference center. A nice hotel next to the conference center would make the conference center a better place to hold conferences. They're not going to come there very often for a 2 or 3 day affair. If they have to drive, you have to be bused from one part of town to the other. People want to be able to walk over to their conference, not have to be bused. So we think that's a development project that would bring restaurants, would bring more people to the community. We think it really doesn't compete with a lot of the other hotels, because this would be mainly, and from what we understand, they're doing quite well. It's hard to find a nice hotel room here in Moorhead during certain times of the year. Of course, university uses it for many of their events. We think that it's another tool in the box that will hopefully bring some development to downtown and revitalize Moorhead. And in turn, we'll get 20% of those proceeds for the county payroll tax and our property tax. And we'll also get the city will get 20% of that. The 80% will go to this quasi-governmental group, including myself and the mayor and those other people I mentioned. And we'll try to bring more development to the community, have some dollars that we can put in for sidewalks, for maybe some city parks, maybe the parking garage, those types of things that we can go together and partner with these people and make this community a much better place to live and a place that more people want to come visit.
About 30 seconds left on the program. Some final thoughts.
I did make another appointment. Trip Holbrook is going to be one of my designees to the planning and zoning, and the that is in place right now. I get to make an appointment to that, and Trip is going to be my appointment. He's a smart young man, local guy, grew up here, and will do a good job for us.
All right. Judge, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful spring.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Round County Judge Executive Dr. Walter Blevins. I'm Chuck Meraz, host of Front Page. See you next time.